This time of year, you're going to find me jigging for crappies off my father-in-law's boat, celebrating a successful turkey hunt, or just sitting on the back deck watching time go by with a quality cigar from Thompson Cigar. Thompson Cigar has been around since 1915, offering the widest array of cigars and cigar accessories at very affordable prices. Thompson Cigar offers your favorite brands like Swisher Sweets, Cohiba, Backwoods, and Monte Cristo shipped fresh directly to your door. Also, be sure to check out their 5-pack fever deals and join their value club for big savings. Visit thompsoncigar.com and enter the discount code SE at checkout for 20% off of all orders over $75. Thompson Cigar, quality cigars at affordable prices. Bow hunters are some of the hardest working hunters there are. Most of us work hard all year long just to get a couple weekends or burn our vacation time to sit in a tree. And just like the American blue-collar worker, we're trying to balance work, family, faith, and a little time for ourselves in the great outdoors. Now let me introduce you to Trollco Clothing, a brand built by blue-collar workers for blue-collar workers. Workwear, comfortable tees, hoodies and hats for both men and women, Trollco represents the hardworking American. So whether you're operating heavy equipment, wrenching on engines, or in a factory living that shift life, Trollco has your back, literally. Head to trollco.com/hunting. That's trollco.com/hunting and enter the discount code Empire25 for 25% off of your first order. Trollco, for the hardworking American. You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
Two Good & Co. coffee creamers are made with farm-fresh cream, real milk, and contain 3 grams of sugar per serving. That's 40% less than the 5 grams per serving in leading traditional coffee creamers for a rich, delicious experience. Whether you enjoy your coffee hot, cold, bold, or frothy, Two Good coffee creamers make every sip a good one. Two Good coffee creamers, real goodness in every sip. Find them at your local Kroger in the creamer aisle.
Close your eyes, exhale, feel your body relax, and let go of whatever you're carrying today.
Well, I'm letting go of the worry that I wouldn't get my new contacts in time for this class. I got them delivered free from 1-800-CONTACTS. Oh my gosh, they're so fast.
And breathe.
Oh, sorry. I almost couldn't breathe when I saw the discount they gave me on my first order. Oh, sorry. Namaste.
Visit 1-800-CONTACTS.com today to save on your first order.
1-800-CONTACTS.
When you post hunting photos on Instagram, they get censored. When you post on Go Wild, you get virtual fist bumps from fellow hunters. When you buy gear on Amazon, you gas up a billionaire spaceship. When you buy gear on Go Wild, we donate to a camp that teaches kids to hunt, fish, and shoot. See the difference? Go Wild is a free social community built by hunters for hunters. Join today at downloadgowild.com, and I'll give you $10 just for setting up your account. And you'll keep unlocking Go Wild rewards as you share content, because guess what? We like hunting pictures. Join at downloadgowild.com or in the App Store.
Welcome to the Missouri Woods and Water Podcast.
With your new host,
Micah, Nate, and Andy joining us
today.
Did we
finally fire him from, like, a host position?
This dude is now the intro man.
He's apparently the intro. I am the new intro guy.
Intro guy?
I guess.
I mean, I'll do it, but
I mean, I don't care.
Micah bitches about everything I do, so he gets to do it now.
That's fine. I'll take that.
Did you do it all, or did you get it through it?
I'll take that responsibility.
Did you get through it?
Yeah, did fine.
Got it all? Okay.
Yeah.
Proud of you.
Okay. Anyways, so on today's show, we have our buddy Blake Garrett on.
You're just getting right into it. We got some small talk to do.
Okay, what small talk?
How's it going?
Fine.
Hey, Andy.
What's up?
How's it going?
It's peachy.
See, you small talk for a while, too.
Mm. Whatever. You been killing any coyotes lately?
We got one the other day, yeah.
How have you been hitting it hard or just here and there?
That day we hit it hard, but otherwise it's here and there. I mean, we just hunted for a day, but otherwise it's just kind of, I don't know, hey, you got half hour after work or something?
Yeah.
Try it here and there. We're just trying. I mean, honestly, right now we're trying some spots we haven't tried before or spots we haven't had any, you know, luck in. We're trying it from different angles, different, you know, different setups, seeing what works, what doesn't.
Nice.
Messing with different calls we haven't called with.
Yeah, just seeing what you can bring in. Maybe call in a cat. Have you tried calling in a cat yet?
So I have not yet, but that is on the short-term to-do list. We have a few spotted, and you know, since you only get from November 15th to January 15th to do it, and I've never shot a bobcat.
Same. I mean, I've shot at a bobcat.
I don't know if I mean, I want to, but if I am successful, I think it's going to bring some more headaches because I really want I really want one mounted.
Now, what would you do, though, if the bobcat, let's say you shoot one, and it's ugly. Do you mount it?
No.
Yeah.
No.
No, you just
skin
it.
Just because I think there's more appeal to shoot a pretty one, yeah.
Yeah.
You probably say, yeah, skin it would be. I mean, you don't want it, yeah. I'd skin it still.
You'd still skin it, obviously, but,
you know, make a pelt.
You wouldn't, you know, spend the, because a bobcat mount's got to be more expensive than a deer.
Oh, I would assume like a grand.
Yeah.
I would assume. I mean, that's probably low ball. I have no idea.
I actually do hope you shoot the bobcat, and that just is going to come up in your household.
Yeah, that might be a tough conversation this year.
Yeah, you guys are already spending a lot of money on mounts this year. Y'all might have to wait a little bit.
Stacy's going to get to know him real well.
Yeah. Got some numbers.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, let's hear what our Missouri hunters have killed this year.
Oh, yeah. So it's a little late because last week's show that we recorded.
It's not late. It's still early because season's still going.
Well, I mean, for rifle season, but just because when we recorded last week's show, the numbers hadn't come out yet. I think they came out the day after.
Okay.
But, yeah, so this year in Missouri, 188,000 basically deer were killed during the November portion.
Does it say last year's by chance?
Yes, it does. That is about 10,000 more than last year.
10,000 more. Huh.
178-ish last year. The top three counties were Franklin, Texas, and Howell.
How? So Texas is just that outlier for me, like, because Texas is pretty far down south, and that's, I mean, down by, like...
I don't even know where that county's at.
It's Texas south. County.
I'm saying I don't know where Texas County is at.
It's about down by the Current River. Least I'm probably wrong just because of my poor geography, but it's down, I mean, we go floating all the time. I know I remember seeing signs, Texas River, whatever, down by Montauk State Park. I think that's in Texas County, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Let me Google that shit for you, make sure you're right.
I know it's south. I'm 100% positive. I know where, like, the general area it is, but I don't know. It just doesn't seem
like...
Yeah,
Texas County is like dead-ass south-central Missouri.
Really?
Yep.
That's surprising to me. Mm-hmm.
And like the population... I mean, one, it's surprising to me because there's not a ton of people that live in Texas County. At one point in time, it was like the least populated county, if I'm not mistaken.
Franklin County's southwest of St. Louis.
Right.
And then Howell is the other county, they said.
They've just been putting in some work then, I guess.
Or southwest. Did I say southeast? Southwest of St. Louis.
Yeah.
I'm still not seeing Howell County.
If I'm not mistaken, it's about central Missouri. Unless I'm an idiot.
I'm sure the listeners are really enjoying this, right?
They are, because
it's intriguing.
Whoever lives in that county that's listening to us right now is like, dumbass, it's here.
Stop telling people we're killing deer.
Well, I'm not finding it, but yeah, those are the top three counties, but 188,000 is not our biggest year. I think around 200 was the biggest year we've had in Missouri, ever. But I mean, it's 10 more than last year. So either we've got more hunters out there.
I'm sure.
I'm sure they probably don't have. Sorry to interrupt. How many tags were sold this year?
No, it didn't say it on that article. At least that they released.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure everybody had an uptick. Like the whole, you know, United States had an uptick on tags. Actually.
Tags sold?
Yeah, tags sold.
Where the freak is Howell County?
I know it did last year and
Howell
the year
County, Howell County is straight south of Texas County on the Arkansas border.
Oh, no joke.
Yeah.
I was way off.
Down by West Plains. Or down, West Plains is in Howell County.
Okay.
Shit, that is surprising to me a little bit. I mean, I'm guessing there's just as many deer down there, though.
Yeah.
You know, because there's a lot of timber. Good for you, Texas and Howe County.
Absolutely.
Congrats.
Get it.
What was the third one?
Franklin. Yep. Just southwest of St. Louis. So mm-hmm. those are top three counties this year, at least in rifle season. So congrats to them.
Yep.
It didn't really say much more. I mean, they talked about like how many
should say how
bucks and antlered. You know, yeah, there were 102,000 basically antlered bucks. 17. Here's what makes me laugh a little bit: 16,400 button bucks. Or oh shit, that was a buck. you know what I'm saying? Like,
right?
Actually,
I don't think anybody's intention is ever to shoot a button buck.
Did you hear that story that our guy from Go Wild had happen? Brad Luttrell. So Brad was on our show, you know, a couple months back or whatever it was. In Kentucky, they get one buck.
Mm-hmm.
He shot this, what he thought was a doe. It ended up having little freaking, golf tee spikes coming out of its head.
Oh, no.
That were covered by its ears. So he didn't know it was a buck technically until he picked it up, and that was his buck tag.
Oh.
He had to punch his buck tag on that. So I'm sure a lot of button bucks are like, oh, I thought that was a doe. But yeah. At least in Missouri, you don't have to use your buck tag for that. And then 70,000 does. So, anyways, you can go to Missouri Department of Conservation's website if you want to get more information. But sounds like our hunters had a good year.
I think it was a good year all around. I mean, seen a lot of deer.
Yeah.
Bullshit.
Oh, wait. No, sorry.
For you.
Not yet. Not for me, anyways. That's all right, though. I've seen deer. I just, not the right deer.
Right.
So.
Okay. Now you can transition into today's show and sponsors.
Which one you want to do first?
You're the freaking host, bro.
I mean, so does that get?
I think today's show is, you know, about like a broken drum. Can't beat it.
Thank God. He's back. I've been having to deal with this crappy joke for a while. It's just terrible.
Hey, I say a joke in the show. Yeah. So, what does everybody let everybody know?
We'll see Nate's attempt at the joke.
Yeah.
If you're listening, give some feedback. Nate's joke or Andy's joke?
My joke wasn't a dirt dad joke. Mine was a dirty joke.
They're still jokes.
So, they're really not in the same category.
I don't even know if I'd call yours a joke. A joke of a joke.
I mean, is that another joke that you just came up with just now?
No, that was just truth.
That's probably
true. A statement or a fact. Same thing.
Okay, so you got that out of the way. Good job.
All right, so on today's show, we have Blake Garrett. He's a local to Missouri, and he gets on and he tells us some different strategies for, you know, targeting bucks and what he does. And it's kind of different from what a lot of people, you know, teach out there. So it's pretty interesting. Some pretty cool stuff, I thought. Something to think about for, you know, if you're looking to target deer.
Outside of the box thing.
We've talked to a lot of people on strategies of deer mm-hmm. hunting, and this is the first time I've heard it worded the way he's put it, and it makes a lot of sense. I mean, outside the box.
Yeah.
You know, you're ever talking to somebody, and they're explaining some way to do something, and you're just sitting there going, huh. I'll be damned, that does make sense.
Yeah.
You know, like,
that might just work.
I mean, that's kind of what, during the show, every time you would say something about, you know, culling bucks, but, you know, managing a farm from a competition standpoint, mm-hmm. and then what he was talking about with the other stuff we talked about, you're like, huh, yeah, well, I could see that working.
Why didn't I think of that? You know, that sort of stuff. Yeah. But
could have brought that to my attention yesterday.
But as for sponsors today, we have Cutty Back. We just want to thank them and for supporting us. And if you guys need 10% off, you can go there. And it is MOWW.
You're there.
10?
Is it? God, you suck. You want to be the freaking host.
21, no.
Yeah, but now you got to start all over.
Oh, shit. MOWW21.
There you go.
For 10% off. So.
And kind of in the show, I mean, Blake explains how important cell cams can actually be to targeting specific bucks.
Yeah,
and
just cameras in general.
Right, right. And finding those patterns. If he didn't, honestly, if he didn't have cell cams to monitor the conditions, he may never have got on this deer if he hunted him the same way.
Yeah. It threw me off for a little while. He kept calling them mobiles.
Right.
I'm like, what the hell is he talking about? And it hit me. He's saying cell cam, but I've never really heard it said that way. So it threw me off. So, yeah, it's a great show. a lot of information in there. So hope y'all enjoy it. Take it out.
This is the Missouri Woods and Water Podcast.
Okay, with us tonight, we got our friend Blake Garrett. Blake, how's it going, sir?
Good. How are you guys?
Doing good, man.
It's one of those nights we've we just had one of those evenings where you were trying to put a kid to bed, and
you got your two kids fighting upstairs. Like,
I've got my two sons running around yelling at each other. they're pushing mom and dad's buttons tonight. That's for sure.
Yep. So they're good at that.
Yep, they are. The 4-year old's actually being good, but then the older two is just they're in rare form.
Yeah.
So, okay. Well, before we get into tonight's show, why don't you introduce yourself to everybody? Tell us who you are, where you're from, what you do for a living, and then since you were born and raised in Missouri as well, why don't you tell everybody what your favorite thing about the Missouri outdoors is?
Yeah. So I grew up in a little town called Marshall, kind of smack dab in the middle of Kansas City and Columbia. Honestly, it's about an hour from each, right down 70. And I grew up here, loved hunting, grew up hunting in Missouri. I think the cool thing about Missouri is that it offers kind of great turkey hunting. There's great deer hunting in it. You can, find a lot of mushrooms. There's just stuff you can do all year in Missouri, get after coyotes late season. So it's always kind of nice to grow up here because you kind of, I think, become a little bit more versatile in being able to do kind of everything, throughout the year. So
yeah,
it's definitely my favorite part about it.
Nice.
I think, I grew up in Missouri, like I said, in a small town, started kind of filming hunts and stuff like that, kind of when it was becoming big, but really I think like Buckmasters was on TV and that was really it. You know what I mean? There wasn't like a bunch of other stuff, just Buckmasters really is what I remember, like Jackie Bushman, but started just filming for fun, honestly, and then kind of got in with a show called Campfire Stories on Pursuit Channel. Did that for about 5 years and started kind of seeing the business part of it and the marketing part of it. Went from that to a show called Full Draw Adventures, which is on Pursuit Channel currently. And I was with Full Draw for about another 5 years or so. Once I was with Full Draw, I started working on marketing stuff pretty heavy and really kind of liked that aspect of it and started doing content creation. Obviously, you start getting into cinematography and some really high-end photography stuff. Found a lot of passion in that. It just kind of all molded and kind of snowballed into what it is now, which I do content creation now. I don't do much with recorded content anymore. Everything I do now is like controlled content. So we do commercials, we'll do magazine ads, we'll do social media posts, things like that for companies. I can tell you as a business owner, for me, it's a lot less stressful because if you're relying on killing deer for income,
right.
It can get painful, it can get
really stressful, right? Yeah. Like you
can do everything right and put all of everything into it and the deer just doesn't show up, and that's the stressful part. So on the created side, it's a lot easier because you can actually, you see your effort come back and you can see some good projects come out of it. So it's kind of where my business has gone in the last 3 years, but yeah, man, doing that, which allows me to hunt a lot. Obviously, because I can, kind of splice the two, and I'm still in the hunting industry. But yeah, that's pretty much the rundown of it. Doing that,
and like anytime you travel, those are travel expenses for the
business, absolutely.
Right?
Yeah,
there,
you
know.
You
so like, you don't even have to try to explain to your wife, hey, I need to go to Kansas, to hunt, or I got to run out to Nebraska because
I gotta go work.
It's a write-off.
Shit's Creek. It's write-off. who writes it off? I don't know. The tax people. It's write-off.
Who
pays for it? I don't know. Nobody.
Yeah, exactly right.
Oh, that's so funny. Yeah, well, yeah. I mean, that's pretty cool. You want to take over our social media?
Yeah, we can use a little help. Sure.
Oh, man. I'll tell you. God bless you for that because I freaking hate it. I try my hardest, but then it's just like, I think I suck at it too. You can tell who's got a knack for content creation and, sometimes who doesn't. And, it's a difficult, it's not as easy as people say, right? Is what I'm getting at.
I think the biggest thing in this industry, I think the thing is being confident and standing out. Like, you have to just not be – I mean, everybody's always going to be disappointed in what you do, no matter what it is. You're going to make somebody mad. Somebody's going to write a comment about it. Somebody's going to be upset. You did it wrong. You did it – you know, you should have done it this way, whatever.
Right.
Once you realize that, like, that doesn't matter, it makes it a lot easier. And I think for me, especially coming from TV and stuff, like, I don't watch outdoor television, and it blows people's minds. Like, what, you don't watch Harlan Bowhunter? You don't? And I love those guys. Like, Mike does a great job. They do great. I'm not discrediting anything they do.
Sure.
I just, for my business, I have no concern in what they're doing. Like, if that makes sense. Like, yeah. I look at it as, like, I try to be different. I try to do my own thing. Right. I'm not trying to mimic.
You're not worried about anybody else.
Yeah.
Yeah. And no disrespect by any means in any way. I think for me, it's easier for me as a creator to kind of keep my head out of that game.
And we've actually talked to a few of the Heartland Bowhunter guys, and they say the same thing. They're like, we don't watch hunting shows and stuff like that. Yeah. They're like, we do our thing, and we do it the best that we can to our ability. So
yeah,
I think a lot of people feel that way that are in the industry.
Yeah.
Yeah, those are the successful ones, I think. I think that's – to be successful, you have to be like that. Yeah. You can't be chasing
somebody. It's really no different with our podcast, you know. Right. Like, I listen – I drive a lot for work, so I listen to a shit ton of podcasts. I almost never listen to music anymore. And I find myself, you know, hey, that's cool. We should do that. And then I forget, well, if we do that, then we're just going to be them.
Yeah.
You know, we're not going to be us.
Right.
Yeah. And, you know, I think people listen to us because we're us.
Hopefully.
Absolutely. You know, I mean, or in spite of me, maybe for you two.
I think we're up to 5 people listening right now. So
seven.
We're good.
Seven.
Seven.
Yeah,
cool.
There's another person. He's here. But yeah, and the good thing is, you know, you do notice that, like, you don't realize how much work really goes in when we started this podcast, how much work really does go into being in the outdoor industry. You know, there's a lot more to it. And of course, you know, we're not even in the film side or, I mean, obviously we have social media, but that's, we just do it ourselves.
Right.
So it's cool to talk to someone who's kind of, I mean, you just kind of, that's, you've done nothing else but be in the outdoor world really your whole life.
No, I mean, I went to college for a year and a half, and then I left that, went to the police academy, and I was a cop actually in Warrensburg. I was a deputy for 4 years there. And by that time I was kind of doing it like part-time, you know, outdoor industry, kind of making the transition. And finally I just kind of made the jump and was like, hey, I'm just going to have to devote a lot of time into this and just see kind of where it goes.
Gotcha.
And and just kind of followed it from there. I've worked some stuff, some like Bass Pro and stuff like that, like part-time stuff and things like that. Kind of getting my feet wet. But for the last 5 years, it's been just straight outdoor content creation.
That's pretty cool.
That's awesome.
Yeah, and of course the nice side of it is that does allow you, like you said, to hunt more because you can use that to your advantage, and also then you're able to schedule what you do around hunting a little bit, which is really, really nice. I mean, all of us still have full-time jobs, so it's a little harder to do that, but honestly, I think starting this podcast has helped us get outdoors more than we even were before because it's, you know, excited us.
Yeah.
A lot more.
I feel like it just keeps that spark going all year long because you know how you know we're obviously in the middle of deer season right now, and then usually you'll taper off and not have to worry about nothing or not even think about hunting that much till spring turkey or whatever. Yeah. But the way I feel now, it's you got deer, coyotes, turkey, and whatever else we can fit in there and trying to get it done.
So. On to the next thing.
Okay, well, today's show, we're actually going to talk about targeting specific deer. So if anybody follows Blake, and we'll let him plug his stuff here at the end of the show, he killed an awesome Missouri buck back on October 29th. So it's been a month, a little over a month at this point. But we're going to talk about targeting specific deer, because in this case Blake targeted that deer from the beginning of the year. So, you know, at that property I would assume you really only hunted one animal, right? Like unless I guess a 200 inch deer walked out in front of you amazingly. I guess
no, there was actually a 200 inch deer on the farm and I didn't hunt him.
Oh my gosh.
Wow.
You got some control.
I partner on a piece of property with another guy, and I let him hunt him.
Nice.
And I helped him. I mean, we helped. Like, after I killed him, deer, went in, put a bunch of cameras on him, just tried to figure that deer out, and we figured him out, and he killed him. He ended up killing him.
So. Nice.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Okay, so maybe I stuck my foot on my mouth on that one. you were still targeting this specific deer, which was still a beast.
Yeah, he's 170 inches. I mean, mainframe 10. He's
yeah.
Deer.
So awesome deer. Just kind of give the listener kind of the basis of the deer itself, and then we'll talk about how when the season started, how you kind of targeted him, what things happened, how you had to, you know, switch things up and all that stuff as the season went, based on what you were seeing. And so just kind of talk about the deer first and why you targeted him.
So that deer, as a three-year-old, I picked him up on this farm. And I'll kind of get into some of our management stuff because it's really out-of-pocket stuff that a lot of people don't do. And I think a lot of people in Missouri don't think about management in that aspect because they think they have a small piece of ground and they can't control it because they're neighbors and whatever the case. The feeding thing with the Missouri's baiting law is so weird. But we kind of use it all to our advantage. And I'll just start back in – 2 years ago, he was a three-year-old, nice 10-pointer, nothing special, probably 130-inch three-year-old 10-pointer. Mm-hmm. Our goal in management in Missouri is like notorious, at least where we live, is that it's notorious for growing 8-pointers, mm-hmm. like big 8-pointers, 130, 140, 150-inch 8-pointers. That's like a 4 or 5-year-old deer. That's just normal. So we tried to really – what we do is like we call it selective culling. We don't shoot any does off the farm at all. We'll go in and we'll allow the harvest of – any 8-pointer from 3 years old and up, right? And every deer that gets to 5 is on the hit list.
Right.
So you really just try to pave the way. If you think of it like high school, you've got your freshmen, sophomores, which would be your 3-year-olds, and you've got your juniors, that would be your 4-year-olds, and your seniors are your 5-year-olds. Well, you want your best deer to make it to senior year, right, not have any competition. So you're trying to kill out from that age group, say sophomores. I want all my sophomores to be young, good 10-pointers and not have to compete with any 8s that are their age or older, because I have a lot better chance of them staying on my farm if they don't have competition there, right?
True. Right.
So that's really where the goal was, and he was kind of a prodigy of it. I mean, I've had that farm for 5 years now, and this was 3 years ago. And so great 10-pointer. I was like, okay, we're going to really just hammer 8-pointers out of here. So I had buddies come from out of state. I had people come in and hunt. I literally got everybody I could get in there to shoot 8-pointers that were his age or older. So we really paved the way to where he was the man, I guess, for his age class. And every other deer was younger than him. There was a couple older deer that were on the farm. We ended up killing them those years he was growing, right? Mm-hmm. So yeah. Like last year, we called him Little Left because he had a little brow tine, he had a little G4. But other than that, he was really – really symmetrical. And I say little, you could just tell a difference in it. He went into his 4-year-old year, and my buddy from Tennessee had passed him. And like, that was the biggest deer he'd ever seen in his life when that deer was a 3-year-old. And I was like, dude, I promise you, if you pass him, I'll let you have a shot at him at 4. Just one shot, you know, whatever. I'm not going to kill him at 4, but I'll let you have a shot at him. Well, as a 4-year-old, he grew a big club on his left side. He literally turned into really Little Left because he had a giant 72-inch 10-point side, and then his left side was like a club. Hmm. And I don't know. There's speculation of what happened to him. I don't know. I think maybe he got EHD and survived it. I don't know, because he had lost a hoof too. One of his hoofs was gone.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah.
That's usually pretty common of an EHD survivor.
Yep.
It was real small weight. I was kind of worried about him. But anyway, he made it, came through. My buddy came in from Tennessee. First, I'd passed him 4 days in a row before my buddy got there. I was like, hey, I know where he is. We'll go in there. We'll probably see him. It's the rut. He's probably going to come through, you know.
Going to be a done deal.
Yeah, so he does. Perfect. Everything's right. Deer comes down trail, 40 yards. Buddy stops him, shoots, and literally hit probably inch and a half sapling that was directly in front of the deer, probably a foot. Like, he would have tendered it. And I actually put that video on. It's on my Instagram. It's on TikTok too, but it's, I mean, perfect arrow flight going right for the deer and sticks and literally shish kebabs this limb.
Oh my gosh.
I'm telling you, the limb was there. The tree is no bigger than a golf ball. And I think I might have seen that video.
Is it a tree or is it like a vine looking thing?
It looks like a vine, but it's a tree.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I've seen that video before.
Yeah. And it's like real low, like this. So that's a little left. So he hit that limb, and that deer, I was like, that was your chance, man. I'm sorry.
I didn't lie to you. I gave you a chance.
You shot him.
If he's not your deer, he's not your deer. So I was like, sorry, bud. We're not going to kill him this year anymore. So then we're just kind of walking him. not really bumping in on the farm. The farm's kind of a cool farm. It's a 500 acre farm. It's got 200 acres of timber right in the middle of it, in the heart of it, and one chunk, which is rare for where I hunt. That's a lot of timber. So we really don't mess around with the inside of there at all. So we really thought he had a good chance of living. So left him alone. My wife has never killed a deer in her life, and I convinced her to go deer hunting last year during rifle, and she passed him. She didn't shoot him. I told her she could. I gave her green light. She's like,
now,
no.
Hold on. Did she didn't shoot him because she was waiting for something bigger, or was she secretly just like my wife would have been and like, I don't want to kill a deer, so I'm just going to say I pass on him.
That's probably what it is. Well, she always says she never goes deer hunting because she doesn't want to mess with what I do. She's like, that's your business. I don't want to get in the middle of it. You know what I mean?
Right.
And she knew the whole story with this deer. And she was like, I'm not going to shoot him. You said you wanted, you know, to go another year. I'm not going to shoot him. I'm like, okay, that's fine. So deer goes on. He lives. Well, I picked up his shed in shed season on a pile because we feed a lot too. So we feed anytime we're not hunting. Obviously, there's a ton of – we use big tine and feed a ton of big tine. All winter, I'll feed big tine and alfalfa bales.
Mm-hmm.
You really try to help our deer get back to weight. And I did that with him, and he dropped his horn. His big side is all I got from last year, but he dropped his 72-inch side at the pile. So it's literally laying. I pull up, and there it is, laying there. I'm like, oh, this is perfect.
That's
you know?
An easy shed hunt right there.
Yeah, yeah. So at that point, when I picked up that horn, I called my buddy that I partner on the ground with. I said, I'm going to kill a little left next year. I don't care if he has a spike. I don't care what he throws. I'm going to kill him. Because just because we had so much history at that point, and that's, to me, what I take away from hunting and gives a value to a buck is history, is a story. I just really like that part about it. So
yeah, I agree.
I was like, that's my deer next year. I don't care what happens, whatever. So fast forward to the summer. Pretty much same stuff. He summers in the same part of the farm like he always does, feeds up, looks great. He's like, comes back to his, I mean, he's almost a mirror of his 3-year-old rack this year, but he obviously is a lot bigger. He's 170 inches. Looks great, but he's kind of timid. It's kind of weird, but he's not really like running the farm like he should.
Must have got ass beats at some point or something.
Yeah,
yeah, something's up because he's just not normal.
Oh yeah,
yes. Hence the 200 inch deer that blew up.
I want to circle back around real quick before you keep going back to your management plan, because it really actually, when you were talking about culling some of the three, you know, the freshmen and sophomores in high school, you're kind of looking at it from a competition standpoint. Then, like your management plan is more like, how can we limit the competition for the ones that we hope make it to 5 years old? And when you said that, it does make a lot of sense, because we had a deer on a farm that I hunt with one of my other brother-in-laws that 4 years ago, there was this 8-pointer who was a decent eight, probably 130 inches, you know, a good deer. He was just a giant dickhead and ran that entire place. And there were bigger deer that kind of moved off after the season started once they started getting testosterone running through their bodies and things like that. And I think it was because of him. And, you know, if he wasn't around, a lot of things could have changed. So that makes sense. I've never really thought of managing a farm from a competition standpoint more for, you know, than any other reason. But
Yeah, it's, I'm telling you, it's, I've done it on probably 8 different properties now in Missouri. And I got the idea from my buddies in Kansas. My buddies in Kansas do the same thing. They, if you kill the oldest deer on your farm every year, you'll always have a big deer to hunt, is what they told me. They're like, telling you, you have to stop hunting horns and start hunting age, and you will grow giants, but you have to be able to do it. And it, we started doing it, and it honestly works. Like, it works really good. Like, you just have to, you think about it, even if a deer, you know, if he's a, If it's a 130-inch 8-pointer and he's a 160-inch 10-pointer, but he's a year younger, that 8-pointer has kicked his butt his entire life. That's all he knows. He doesn't know he can beat that deer because that deer's always a year older and always has – I mean, he was a spike when this deer was a 2-year-old. You know what I mean? Like, he's just always beat that deer, so he's never going to try him. And you have to think about it. Like, the reason you lose a lot of deer, bucks-wise, I think, is because of competition. They want to go be the man somewhere. And the older, the reason there's not a bunch of 5-year-olds on a farm is because when they get to 4 and 5, their job is to go be the man somewhere.
There's only one king of the farm. Yeah.
They're going to want to go be that guy. So really what we try to do is start back at 3 and try to pave the way to give that guy the throne and it worked perfectly for the left. You know what I mean?
Right.
Does that kind of reign true even though when the rut kicks off and deer are running like crazy? I mean, are you still having new deer come in that you've never seen all season?
Yeah.
Or
oh, yeah.
They stay out because there's a king, you know, the ruler of the roost in there?
No, so when you talk about dominance and territorial areas, for us, really we see that impacted from hardhorn to about Halloween. That's when those big deer will run that area. That's what scrapes all about. They'll push deer out of there. They'll do all that. When the rut comes on, usually your big deer is so occupied that he can't deal with territorial disputes. He will if he runs into them, but 9 times out of 10, he's a big deer. He knows what his job is, and he's going to spend all of his energy doing what he's supposed to do, which is breed.
Yeah.
So he's not going to be running. That's why scrapes go dead.
Mm-hmm.
Right? He's not worried about what other bucks are where. He knows where he's going to go, and if he walks up on that buck with a doe, he's going to take her, and it just is what it is. So you do see an influx of deer through the peak of the rut, you know, but not to a point to where I can say, like, oh, he's going to, you know, my big deer is going to keep all the deer out of here for the rut. Like, no, he's not. He's way too preoccupied.
Well,
other things.
It's interesting the way you put that, because – the property that I killed my big deer off of this year that I was after during the summer, it was him and another one that sometimes were together, obviously, when they were in velvet.
Yeah.
Not very often, actually. I think maybe twice I got pictures of them together. But anyways, when they went hard horned, the one I actually ended up killing was gone. I mean, just gone. And the one that I hunted until October, first week of October, was there pretty regularly. And then he kind of moved off, and then the one I ended up killing was back. And it was almost like they just switched spots. I don't know what reason there was behind it. I think they're the same age. They were about the same size as far as the rat goes. The one that was there earlier is probably a little bit bigger, wouldn't you say, Andy?
Yeah. But the crazy thing is that he never came back.
He still hasn't been back, no.
He disappeared from October on, has never set foot back on that farm.
And, I mean, it's possible that he could have got shot or, you know, hit by a car or something like that, I'm sure. But,
But you know, it is interesting that once that testosterone started running through them, they were never there in the same time frames. And I'm not talking about, you know, days apart. It was, like, literally Reptile, which is the one I was hunting early, his nickname. He was there only, and it was every day I'd have pictures of him, and, you know, I was trying my damnedest to get him dead. And then October 7th, it was like, all right, I'm going to go somewhere else now. I feel like I need to leave. And October 10th, noob, boom, there he is. And then he was on the farm pretty well until I killed him a month later. So, obviously there were other smaller bucks out there, but it's weird how those two deer switched and also weren't together after the velvet came off.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, the pecking order is a real thing. It's what, you know, I think you're never going to change genetics. So I hate using the word culling. That's why we always say, like, selective harvest, because genetics have been around way longer than we have. Like, to get your 8-point genetics out, you're going to have to shoot every 8-pointer for 20 years.
Right. And you have to kill a bunch of does, too.
And does that you don't even know what does carrying that genetic.
Right.
Right.
It's just an oddball thing of it. You know what I mean? So you just got to look at it as try to keep your tens alive as, you know, and as less competition as you can through their lifespan, and you keep them on the farm, hopefully. You know,
so
that's the.
Do you have any theory as to why stuff like what I just talked about happens, where one deer will seem like he's running the roost and then just say, you know what, I'm out? Is it because he's got a rut range that might, you know, they talk about rut ranges as summon ranges.
Yeah.
You know, do you have an opinion on why that happens and that switch happens?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of factors to it. I mean, I think, you know, you talk about deer like people, right? So you got different personalities you're dealing with. There's deer that don't handle pressure very well at all. Mm-hmm. There's deer that handle pressure and deal with it. You know, it could be a pressure issue. Maybe not saying you put a lot of pressure on the farm, but just a little bit of pressure on the farm.
I did.
Just a small amount of pressure on the farm. Maybe that one deer wouldn't tolerate it and the other one would. I mean, you have to think about it. You can't ever – anybody that tells you this is how you kill a big buck's full of shit. they're all different, and you just got to try to figure out their personalities and their ticks. Usually the big ones have a tick that they like that just keeps them alive. It's not that they're smarter. It's just that maybe they don't want to move in daylight as much as other deer. Maybe they don't like to move as far. Typically, I've found that when we run into a big deer, and I say like a big, like an 80s plus deer, he's usually either really, really compact and not moving far at all, and he stays in one area.
Yeah.
Or he roams like crazy and nobody can ever get him figured out.
No consistency.
Right? He's just a roamer. Yeah, he's just a runner. So those are really the two, I will say, personalities that keep them alive the longest, and that's what makes them big deer.
Yeah.
There's similarities, obviously, that deer do for survival, that, you know, daylight movements, things like that, that every deer is going to do. But realistically, if you're going to hunt a specific deer, like, you got to watch him. You got to figure out what he's going to tolerate with you going in there running cameras. Like, that's why feeding to us is so good, because we feed. I mean, I'll feed up until like September 1st. And even when I'm not going to hunt a farm, like if I've got a farm I don't even have a shooter on, I'll feed that farm till November. I mean, but if it's a farm I am hunting, I'll shut it off in September 1st.
Sure.
And then I'll start right back up January 15th.
Yeah.
So, but those things allow me to have my presence on the farm be a positive influence. And I kind of get to see how those deer react. If I got a buck who will daylight every time I go in there, then he's not worried about pressure. Now, I have some bucks that freak out on a trail camera and it goes off and they turn inside out and you don't see them again.
Yeah.
So it's just kind of noticing that stuff when you start trying to figure out one deer, like you got to kind of learn his personalities and his ticks. And a lot of times if it's a deer that's been on the farm a long time and you've had the farm for a long time.
Yeah.
He probably knows your game. Like, he knows where your stands are. He knows how you hunt it. So you got to kind of think out of the box. Like, okay, how's this deer survived for 3 years? I've been trying to kill him. I haven't even seen him on the hoof.
Yeah.
But I'm getting daytime pictures of him. He's doing something different that I'm not used to. Or I'm, you know, he knows the game.
Yeah. Well, and so then, of really course, probably has a lot to do with the property itself as well, right? I mean,
yeah.
You know, every property is different too. And, absolutely. You know, what was weird about the one that you're kind of giving me some advice about is – I don't know that we knew that deer before this year. Andy and I were trying to, like, Andy knows this property well too. So we were like, do you think it's Johnny Cage or do you think it's this deer? And I'm like, I don't think it's any of them.
If it was a previous deer, he blew up like 50 inches.
Yeah, like he changed big time. Yeah. And so we're sitting there like, okay, we'll just say he was between 160 and 170 inches by our guesstimate based on photos. And then season hit. And the dude started daylighting like 2 hours before dark and would take the exact same path every night. And I'm like, I'm going to kill this freaking thing. Like, as long as I can get there. And damned if I couldn't, you know, I just couldn't get there the same nights he would daylight on me. And and then the next night, my daughter would be in a volleyball game and I'd be sitting at the game and get a picture and boom, there he is.
Yeah.
And, but then October 7th, he just was like a ghost. So.
Right.
A deer like that, do you think he could maybe be one that is just one of those roamers? You know, I mean, you know, that last year was somewhere else. This year he decided to be there, and maybe next year he's going to be 4 miles from there.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. He could be. Yeah. I mean, that's the thing. And you got to look back at like what you killed too. What did you kill off the farm last year? Is there anything you opened up for him to come over to the farm? Is there any, you know what I'm saying? Right. Or did a deer die? Did a deer get shot by the neighbor? Or, you know what I'm saying? There's a lot of things in those factors too. When you talk about it's like coyotes. There's a trick about coyotes too. And it's when you get a really, like, say you got a dead hole at a livestock auction or whatever, or a dead hole at a corral and at a feedlot. And if you shoot the pack that's on that dead hole,
new pack's going to show up.
Another one will come in there. It's a sought after place. And deer do the same thing. Bucks do the same thing, especially like our farms. That's why we say we don't shoot any does off the farms. Because we want it to be kind of a sanctuary. We want it to be a place where I'm picking up new bucks. And after those bucks breed the does on their farms, here they come to my farm. Cause I still got does that aren't bred yet.
Yeah.
You know, so we're picking them up. And the downfall to that is that your bucks are really hard to kill in the peak of the rut. Like in rifle, it's really tough to kill our big deer in rifle, but that's what I want. I want them at home. I don't want them out on my neighbor.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't care if I can't kill them. I just want them to live at that point. So, right. You know, if they're on my farms locked down, that's fine. I don't care. I don't want them on my neighbor's farm looking for does. So that's kind of the ideology behind does and keeping does alive. And I've yet to talk to anyone or have any debate with anyone to give me a good reason why does should be shot.
That's what I've always said, right? Where there's hoes, there's bros.
I don't think you said that.
I mean, isn't it true though? Like, what, you know, where there's the ladies.
Other than, other than food, there's really no other thing with it. And I dump enough supplemental feed and do enough with food plots and stuff and crops on the farm that we've never had deer even, you know, close to starving.
Yeah.
Well, that's a really interesting way to look at it, is from a competition standpoint. I mean,
yeah it makes a lot of sense.
I've never even thought of it in that manner. I mean, you talk about, oh, that deer's a dickhead, you know, or whatever, right. But never look at it from, you know, you remove the younger ones and keep a few of the older ones going. Eventually that older one's going to be five and he's going to run it all.
I mean, they're always competing for food, competing for females, competing for, I mean, territory. I mean, so it makes sense.
Yeah. All right. So circling back around a little left, we went off way to the left. And that was my fault, honestly. But, so he wasn't doing the same things that you thought he was. He was a little more timid and all that sort of stuff. That's kind of where I interrupted you.
Yeah. So I went in and you know, I set up everything for how he was as a 4-year-old in the rut, like stands, everything, cameras, bring cameras on all the scrapes. And I just wasn't getting him. I had like 9 mobiles on 9 scrapes on that edge where he was living and didn't get one picture of him. So I was like, well, what the heck? So I had a camera that I keep on a mineral lick that I've got there in a staging area. And every time, like, I would drive in there and I remember one day I drove in on like a Monday and I hung a double set for a different wind so I could hunt this funnel he always uses in the rut. And every time I go to the farm, I do something positive for the deer, like we talked about before. So like if they hear, I'm kind of OCD with it. Like I'll drive my side by side in, I won't take my truck side by side every time, drive it the same way to check cameras, the same thing. Like it's all the same.
It's like and training cattle to
drive my side by side in. Yeah, drove side by side in, and I was like, well, I hung that stand. And I was like, well, crap, I'm on the farm. I better go dump a little bit of mineral. So I always take and just dump, I mean, literally like a cup full of mineral out, just a little bit of something new, drive out. He hits my mobile camera, daylights it. I'm like, oh my God. So the next day I go in and hunt him on that mineral lick, but I sneak in, don't drive in or anything. He doesn't show up. I'm like, okay. So I do it again the next day. I had the wind on Wednesday. When any stood me up again, I'm like, where is this deer at? So Thursday, I was like, well, screw it. I'm just going to go in. I'm going to put a blind up and another mobile on the north end and see if I can catch him up there. Maybe he's coming from the north. I put the blind in. Well, when I drove through, I put a little bit of mineral out, drove on by, went, put the blind up, came back out. He daylighted on it. And I'm like, dude.
Train him to the side by side.
Yeah. So
I am literally going to go hunting with a cup of mineral in my hand and just start shaking it as I'm
I'm like, I'm going to literally try to rope and dope this deer. Like, I was like, I'm going to try it. Why not?
Absolutely. You know? So
I had my 14-year-old was here and I was like, man, I need you to film for me tonight. And he's like, okay. So I drive in the side by side. I dump an entire bag of nitro mineral, like an 8-pound bag, dump the whole thing in the mineral in the lake. And I'm like shaking the bag and stuff, just making all the noise like normal. Back out. I put my 14-year-old in the blind, drive out, drive around. And then I come back in. That was at like 2 o'clock in the afternoon, and 5:30, man, here he comes. Like he had to be bedded within 100 yards of that mineral lick when we were there and didn't care. And 5:30, he just shows up, comes straight to that mineral lick.
He thought this dummy went and brought me something to eat.
I was actually joking when I said, you know, shake the cup, you know, to make it, but no, it's dude, almost it like kind of what it was.
It legitimately works. Like I'm telling you, you can condition deer like cattle if you're just kind of OCD with it and let them think they have you figured out, don't surprise them, it can work. Like it's unbelievable, but it can. And that's 100% what happened to him. But come to find out, what was wrong with him is he had got gored. I think he got hung up, honestly, but his mouth, and you'll see it in one of the pictures, his whole right side of his mouth was worn all the way to the jawbone. Where it had an antler in it.
Ooh.
And it was worn all the way, all the hair was gone all the way to the jawbone. And then the other side had a giant puncture that went in his lip and went up to his like nasal cavity. So he got punctured in the mouth, which is why he was being timid and wasn't hitting scrapes and wasn't, you know, he was just, I think he was honestly pretty sick. I mean, he's
probably just trying to survive, I would think.
Yeah. I mean, I think he was hoping that I was going to dump feed. You know what I mean? Because
it's
like a mouth injury like that. I don't know how much he could eat. And he was hitting mineral crazy. But
that's probably why he was hitting the mineral, because he was craving anything at that point.
Because his weight, I mean, he was at his, he was at his summer weight. He wasn't skinny. He was at his summer weight, but he wasn't at like what a rut weight should be. You know what I mean? Yeah. He was not even close to what his rut weight should be. So, overall, it worked. I don't know. I can't really complain, but kind of interesting. I would assume, the 200-inch deer that we had on the farm, I would assume that he was probably the one who did it. He had a big spade that came off the front, like a double beam, mm-hmm. kind of hooked up in front of his face.
Oh, okay.
And they kind of, that buck, I talked about, I had like 200 acres of timber. He would run the bottom part of it, but he wasn't. He was all the way on the west side of it whenever I killed, little left was. So I'd say that 200 kind of pushed him out. They probably ran into each other in that middle part of the farm where they circle. And I'd say he probably got short into the deal in the fight.
But, had himself a little fight and lost it.
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely. But yeah, man, it was, it's just about being observant and trying to kind of think on your feet and never think you got them figured out. Just try new things. And mobile cameras are worth their weight in gold.
Yep.
Work. I mean, up-to-date data is unbelievably nice.
This is our, me and Micah's first year with cell cams. Andy's like second, really, or third with cell cams.
Probably third. Fourth. Actually, I've had that one. I used to run an old one for a while.
Oh, really?
But
I'm going to tell you this.
I don't use them like I should.
Super, super helpful. You are correct.
Yeah.
And also super, super freaking aggravating.
Absolutely. Frustrating.
Yes. Because, like, we were talking about this.
Yeah.
Micah had a deer that he was after. And, like, he couldn't hunt one night because him and my sister, he's married to my sister, they had a disagreement about who was taking the kids or something. And so last second, he's like, oh, shit, I could have went hunting. But it's already 5 o'clock. I'm not going to go traipsing in there, right now. It's not doing it.
Yeah.
5:45, the deer he was after shows up in front of his camera.
Yeah.
And it gives you that real time, like, damn it.
Should have been out there.
Right.
If you were just checking like a regular trail cam 3 weeks later, you would have never remembered that night happened night, And so it sometimes can be aggravating. I mean, the same thing with my deer. Andy had it happen where he's like, man, I should have done it tonight,
Or you're sitting in one stand and he's in front of another.
Right, that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
But
that happened
the, once. But what I love about it is the real-time information like you were talking about with him that it does give you. Whether it's exactly at the moment it happens or not, when you get that photo, you are still in that day or in that time frame that you can look back and go, this morning it was 50 degrees with a south wind.
Right.
Instead of
moving this way and
kind
of put little pieces together.
Yeah. Yeah. Because one thing I learned out, from hunting out west so much is that deer never bed in the same spot, really. I mean, they do sometimes, but not really. But they have spots they want to go bed with specific winds.
Mm-hmm.
So if you can, in the old days, I say old days, but with regular trail cameras, it's really hard to know what your winds are, what your winds were for that morning when you went to bed, all that stuff's tough. With a mobile, it's really nice because, like, Little Left was one of them that he would, anytime he had a north wind, I knew he bedded really close to that mineral lit because he always daylighted on a north wind. I mean, like 5:30, 6 o'clock, like broad daylight. Mm-hmm. So I knew with a north wind, he liked to bed somewhere around there, really close. And those deer choose that, but you had to, if he had a south wind in the morning, he'd be there, but it may be 10 minutes after dark. It'd be right at dark. You know what I'm saying? So he would bed a little bit farther away. So mobiles are kind of a nice thing to where you can really watch what your morning wind is to where he went to bed and then see what he did that evening.
Yeah.
That's kind of a piece of the puzzle we run through a lot too, because the big deer just know, they've been around the game. They know where the best bedding is and they usually get those spots. They'll kick somebody out of them if they need to. But in Nebraska, I mean, heck, I've watched it with mule deer and whitetails where you'll see deer come in and it's like a race to this specific bed that they all use for that wind, and the big deer will come in and literally kick deer out of it so he can go lay down in that spot. But that's what kind of taught me that whole thing years ago.
Yeah.
And it holds true. It's just tough to, heck, there were years I'd write down the wind every day. I'd like wake up and write down what the wind is. So then I could go back and look at my card in 2 weeks and tell what the, what I mean?
And that's how you'd have to do it that way.
Absolutely is. Yeah.
But
absolutely.
When you're getting that information at least 24 hours or 12 hours from when it happened, you can use your short-term memory to go, I know what it was this morning. And then it's like your Rolodex is just kind of fresh. And yeah, that's a new thing for me and Micah this year. While I still think it overall is a great thing, yeah, there's times where you're just like, screw it, I hate this. You know? But and you were talking about, you know, what he did when he was 4 and a half. You set up to hunt him that way.
Absolutely.
Initially.
Yeah.
And I think, and I'm probably one of them, a lot of us would continue to beat our head against the wall, just assuming it's going to work.
Right.
What do you think would have happened if you would have continued down that path of, I'm going to hunt him like I know he is? Do you think you had him on the ground at all? Any chance?
No. No way. No chance. I would never kill him. Ever.
Yeah.
There's absolutely no chance. He just wasn't doing that stuff. He wasn't, you know, I told, it's funny, I called a buddy of mine. I'm like, how do you kill a deer in the rut that's not rutting? Like, you have to literally take your brain out of everything that it tells you to do.
Yeah.
Like scrapes and rubs and funnels and day, all day sits. And like, you have to take it, you have to just shut it completely off and be like, I've just got to pay attention to what I'm seeing, what he's doing, and just react to it. You know, like we did, and it just got lucky and did it. But yeah, it was absolutely the weirdest thing I've ever had to accomplish. And one of the hardest things I've ever done as a hunter when I've, you know, I always pattern after one deer. I try to kill one deer a year, but that was one of the biggest tests of it. Cause I was like, you know, that's why I was like, well, I'm gonna try to rope and dope him. Why not? Yeah. You know? What else? I was throwing darts at the board, essentially.
It's like it's like the backwards bump and dump, right? Like, like you want them to hear you. It's kind of like the bump and dump, right?
Yeah.
But they're just going to, you don't want, you know, they're bedded somewhere close enough that they're like hearing what you're doing so that you hope they show up for that. It was, you know, it's, I would have never thought when I go dump mineral, he shows up that those two things had any correlation either. Like, I'd have just been like, oh, look, he's on the freaking mineral tonight or something.
Do you think he was like on the downwind side of that mineral and could smell new mineral, or what was, or could, did he hear the side by side and start correlating it with new mineral showing up?
He heard it.
Yeah.
100% heard it. Cause when he came into it, he didn't even run the wind on it. It was a northwest wind. He came straight in from the east.
Yeah.
I mean, straight east from it. But I think he just bedded right. I mean, I think he was close to get up at 5:30. That's an hour before sunset that time of the year.
Yeah.
I mean, I think he literally just heard the side by side. He knew every time that side by side he heard that, there was something new at that lick. You know, and he knew that for 3 years or 2 years, 3 years. Yeah, you know, I mean, so his whole life, he kind of had noticed that. And that's what I talk about with it. Like, you build that ideology. I build that now in my yearlings. My yearlings come, my yearlings always pay attention to what their does do or their mama does. Well, their mom's coming in. She hears a side-by-side. Where's she going? She's daylighting on it. You know, so you kind of start building that whole foundation from, we've known it for 5 years now. And it takes a little bit to build that dynamic or that perception, whatever you want to call it. But once you get it built, like, they're just trained that way to where they don't see it as a threat. You know what I mean? There's nothing bad that comes out of it.
Right.
So
that's a hell of an idea.
So you're training your deer pretty much, right? Kind of.
Condition
or whatever. So yeah, condition.
He's got a clicker out there. Click, click, click. Right. Good job.
So how much of a stickler are you with your scent control then? I'm assuming you're not going out there with gloves and, you know, trying to be scent free, throwing that mineral. So when you're hunting, how stickler do you get about it?
None. I just hunt to win.
Just hunt to win.
Okay. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I get does, like, I'll have does that will pick me, you know, they'll get downwind to me, and you'll literally watch them, and they'll smell and they'll look for you, and then they'll just kind of move off. Like, they won't blow. They won't try to find you. There's no, you know, I hate the terminology of if she blows, she goes. All that does is justify her actions. So if her yearling's standing next to her and she blows and then you blow an arrow through her, that yearling now knows that if something blows, something's about to go down. Like, that was really a danger. But if you let her blow.
Or is it teaching her a lesson not to blow? I mean, you gotta look at it both sides.
I don't think you're gonna scull them into
it. It's like when you backhanded her, like, hey.
Right?
Don't you run.
But no, I think honestly, that's why I don't have any problem with guys killing does. Kill those all you want to, whatever. I do it as a pressure thing. You almost can never kill a doe alone. And every time you kill a doe, you're educating the other deer. That's your problem, right? That you are a threat. There's a threat there. There's danger on the farm, whatever the case may be. we have specific spots we can shoot does, and that's where we take people to shoot does or whatever, mm-hmm. That aren't really in core areas. But for the most part, yeah, 9 times out of 10, like, I've had does blow before. I have a doe on the farm, on that specific farm, that loves the blow, but no deer pay attention to her. I mean, not a single deer. She cannot clear a field. She'll try.
Shut up, Karen.
That's exactly Karen. What it is. Like, she'll blow, and those other deer, like, they just start eating. Like, no one even gets, like, half the deer only pick up their heads. Like, yeah.
The boy who cried like, wolf. Oh,
there she is. Yeah.
She's blowing again. But I think that, you know, for me, it's just positive interaction constantly, if that makes sense. You just try to always have a positive interaction with them. And if you have a positive interaction, that scent control stuff and all that stuff really goes out the window, because if it's a positive interaction, it's a positive interaction. Right. You really probably want them to smell you more than you don't, you know. But again, I say I'm OCD. And when I say I'm OCD, I mean, like, I literally drive the same path, do the same backup. I do the same, like, everything the same. I don't take anybody with me. Like, camera guys stay in the side-by-side. They don't get out. You know, if we go do a product shoot or something like that, it's not even on the farm. It's somewhere else. Like, we won't even touch it. Like, it's just super – I want to be super predictable to them, as predictable as I can be, so I'm not there. It's no different than guys checking cows. You know, how many farmers have you seen that shoot deer out of tractors and stuff? Yep. That the deer lays there and the freaking tractor drives by them 50 times and they don't care because it's never been a threat.
Yeah, I get it.
You know what I mean? I mean, that's the kind of aspect I try to build with it there. And it – I don't know, man. It works. That's all I know.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Results don't lie. I mean, at the same time, you're still playing the wind, bro. I mean, you know.
Absolutely. Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
it's
yeah,
not
yeah.
like you're going in saying, I don't care if it he's bedded over there, I'm going to let it blow right to him. He's still going to come. That's not what's going on.
No. Not at all. No. And we're not walking over trails. I mean, everything's about access. You're in and out easy. You know, you're not walking through the funnel to get to a tree. You're not, you know, all that stuff's controlled. But, like, I don't spray down. I'll run Nozonix every now and then in, like, some of the box blinds. Mm-hmm. But really, that's just some of the box blinds are in some areas where deer get, like, within 5 feet of you to go around you and stuff to get out to the feed. So I just run them in there just to stay clean.
Yeah.
But I don't know, man. I don't stress on it too much. I used to put all my trail cameras in their own Ziploc bags and wear rubber gloves and literally,
damn,
I saw no benefit from it.
Yeah, that's even more OCD than I've even ever.
I'm telling
thought
you,
about
my
being,
brain
yeah.
is like, it's bad about it. But
that's awesome, though. I mean, if you target a specific deer, it's, you know, almost easier at that point, I guess, when you're only paying attention to what he's doing, you know. And
yeah,
I guess that's a nice lesson there. But before we hop off with you, I do want to ask one more question that doesn't really have anything to do with the hunt, or maybe it does. But when you're talking about your mineral and feeding all year long, obviously not during hunting season,
right.
But are your feed sites and your mineral sites close to each other?
Same spot.
So you'll put the feed right there with the mineral?
Absolutely. Yeah. I usually put the mineral lick in the middle,
uh-huh.
and then I'll put feed around the outside.
Okay.
And then they'll have that dug out in the middle. It'll be like a little bowl, and then we'll feed around the outside. Because the big time, nice thing about big time is it has mineral in it, like attached to the actual feed.
Mm-hmm.
So you kind of get mineral out there anyway. So our mineral licks really don't get good until we stop feeding, because mm-hmm. they're already getting mineral out of the feed.
Right. They're really not pawing for anything.
They're not really pawing. But once that feed goes out in September, then they're like smashing those mineral licks, because that's the only mineral they got.
Do you, I know you said it's a 500 acre farm, so this is going to be a different answer for a lot of people based on how big their farms are. But are you trying to have a central feed site, or are you putting multiples throughout the farm based on, like, different winds you would like, or how are you handling that?
No, so I'll put them in. Like, it's all about access, like we talked about before. Like, I talked about that 200-acre piece of timber. Like, I don't go in the heart of that at all, mm-hmm. unless we're picking up a deer. Like, it just doesn't happen. So we'll stay out on the edges, easy access, in and out. I'm going to bring the deer to me, right? I don't want to have to go to that deer, really. So I'm going to set those up. But I try to put mine strategically to where I can get different groups of bucks from, say, my neighbor's deer, say, you know what I mean? If I've got a farm, I'm going to put two on the south end, maybe one on the south end, one on the west end, one on the east end, one on the north end, right? Like, mm-hmm. I'm going to just try to pull in different deer to where I can kind of tell, like, if I've got four mineral licks on that farm, one east, one west, one north, one south, and I've got a buck that only hits the west one, it gives me a little bit of idea of, okay, well, I know he's somewhere on this west end of the farm, right? If I've got a buck that only hits the north one, if I got a buck that hits the north and the west, you know what I mean? I can kind of put the pieces together early in the summer,
yeah,
to kind of know what his range is and where he comes from. And we'll pull deer. I mean, we'll literally pull deer off the farm that there may be a buck that only hits the north one,
mm-hmm,
and doesn't hit anything else. Well, I know he's probably living on my neighbor's north, or,
sure,
or staying at that north end, somewhere like that. So
now, would you do that any differently if it was a much smaller piece of property? Like, a lot of people that we listen to, and even us guys, hunt smaller pieces.
Yeah, probably 100 acre or less,
so
I would assume. But
would that change your decision on where you would put mineral? Or not where, but how much, how many sites, yeah, you would put in there?
Yeah. Like, I've got a piece that, I got a 40 acre piece. I only have one lake on it.
Mm-hmm.
And I've got like a 100 acre piece, and I've got two lakes on it, one in the north, one in the south. It's kind of a narrow rectangle. So I kind of run them like that. It's just, it's a matter of really just trying to think about, okay, where do I want to put an observation point that I can, you know, kind of make sure I've got the farm covered safely and kind of on both ends to where I know, you know, this deer's here, whatever the case may be. And what you'll come to find out and you'll learn is that, man, for whatever reason, like we talked about before, there's just some deer that just won't do things. Like, they just won't cross a creek, or they just won't, you know, they just have a boundary. And it sounds so dumb, but you may move 300 yards and pick up a deer you've never had before.
Yep.
Like, so you kind of got to think about that when you're spacing them out. Like, I would definitely try to put a couple in, you know, especially if you got easy access. Like, don't drive through your whole farm to put one on the north end if you have to. Like, if you have access from the north, then do that one there. You know what I mean? Easy access is the main kind of it. But yeah, I'll try to spread them out as much as I can, to where I feel like the farm's covered for, I know everything that's around it, or using the farm for the most part.
That's cool. That's awesome.
Yeah, good information for sure.
Well, congrats, man.
Yeah,
awesome. Hell of a deer.
Yeah.
Awesome deer, awesome story. I mean, awesome strategy. I mean, that's just an out-of-the-box strategy to get it done.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it can be done in Missouri, I'm telling you. Like, 500-acre farm's pretty big for us, honestly. There's everything
we've done. That's huge in Missouri, yeah.
Yeah, pretty small. I mean, 200 down really is everything you run. You can do it. It's just a matter of just trying to be consistent and trying to keep your stuff consistent with what you do.
Yeah.
For the most part.
Before I say what I'm going to say, you guys have any more questions about Little Left?
No, I think I got it covered.
Yeah, no, I think it's awesome information. Stuff you don't hear or think about every day.
I've been waiting for about 48 minutes once I heard his name to say this. Blake, ask me how it's hanging.
How's it hanging?
Short shriveled a little to the left. Boom. That's his name, Little Left.
I got to start doing dad jokes.
Yeah. He's
start doing dad jokes.
Jeez. Nate's trying to take over the joke of the day.
It's not even a dad joke. That's just hilarious. Anyway, I'm not great. Funny. That's the problem. Okay.
Yeah, well, won't you go ahead and take a minute and tell listeners and stuff how to see what you're doing out there.
Yeah, where they can find your content.
Yeah, so Instagram is probably the best one. That's my main one. It's just the Blake Garrett on Instagram. I think I gotta look up TikTok. I think TikTok's the Blake Garrett 20. We do a bunch of just video stuff on that, but just kind of throw some content there. Let me make sure this is right.
That thing's so hard, in my opinion, to get content because I take down every coyote when I post.
Yeah, you can't share like impacts really good. They don't like it. You can do some thermal stuff every now and then, but it's actually the Blake Garrett 8 is what my TikTok is.
Only 12 off.
Yeah, we do that. And then, I mean, we have hunts on YouTube, obviously some past year hunt stuff. If you go to Full Draw and look at their past seasons, I've got a couple shows on there every year. And then Unfiltered Outdoors, if you go to YouTube, we have stuff on there too, content on there. And working on some Predator stuff for getting ready to start that. So that'll be fun. Ready for that one. We'll throw a bunch of... I'll do a bunch of recorded Predator content stuff. That's usually where we have a lot of fun with it. So.
Yeah, we're going to see you at the Movets Outdoor Tournament this year?
I don't know. I didn't know about that.
Oh, I don't think they've posted
it yet. They haven't had a date and time yet.
Yeah, we saw you there last year.
Yeah, I was going to say,
I think we're going to do that. I think I'm probably going to hit ATA too this year. I wasn't going to, but it sounds like it's going to be decent at least. So.
That's cool.
Good.
Awesome, man.
Yeah.
Do that one as well, but.
Well, man, congratulations on an awesome Missouri deer. And then, I mean, we could have talked about the 14 other deer you've taken down too, but.
Just three. I had the best year I've ever had. I got lucky.
Yeah.
Started off horrible, but it got good.
Yeah, I had to go back through your pictures. I'm like, what freaking deer did I want to talk about? Because every damn time I see something, I'm like, there's a new one. Okay.
Yeah.
And I mean, I joke about 14, but because it felt like that, you know, yeah. Like, damn.
Oh, I know.
I had them on the list to, you know, have an episode with them since October 29th and
yeah.
Keep looking through the deer yeah. Now.
Yeah. Yeah. My whole, so it started real quick. I'll tell you real quick. It's my season started out in Nebraska and I shot, I think probably number two, maybe number three, typical all time archery and didn't find him.
Oh no. Yeah.
Coyotes got him and pushed him. And actually the neighbors found him and won't give it up. So,
oh no.
So, yeah. So he's like 192 inch 4x4.
Dear oh. Lord.
But yeah, that's so it started off horrible. And then, you know, I went dry spell until a little left. I killed him on 29th. And then my rifle buck was just an absolute lucky. I had a guy in from Big Time. He shot a buck and I went over there to help him recover it. And we're literally standing over it. I look up and there's 170 inch 10 pointer. I've never seen before in my life. No idea where this deer came from. Walking. He comes to 40 yards. Doesn't even see us. It's just walking by. I'm like, hey, let me see your gun real quick. With his gun, I literally shoot the deer. Like, it was the most lucky thing I've ever done in my life. So
that's awesome.
I guess you got to get lucky every now and then. But
yep.
Shot him, and then I shot that deer in Kansas Monday. So, and which I'd been hunting him pretty hard since October. So
that's pretty awesome.
Well, congrats,
yeah,
man.
Yeah, congrats on an awesome year.
Three of them. That's I haven't ever had a good year like that. That's a great year. So
yeah,
I'm ready to shoot some coyotes. So that's I'm tired of the deer.
Yeah, and it's about that time. Although it's yeah. December 1st, we're recording this, and it's 65 degrees today. So
yeah, exactly. Yeah,
whatever.
Yeah.
Well, Blake, we appreciate it, and if you don't have anything else, we're gonna stop this one.
Sounds good, bud.
All right, man. Thanks.
Thanks, Blake.
See you guys. Yeah.
Okay.
Definitely new information. Never heard on that. Yeah, I don't know how to put it. I guess just. Outside the box thinking gets it done sometimes. You can't argue with results.
No, he I mean, he's a good hunter and he gets deer, you know, big deer down quite often. So
I guy's mean, a killer. I mean, yeah. check out his Instagram stuff that he tagged in there.
Yeah, I mean, him and his crew. I mean, they do a lot of killing. So
we had a good year. They had a phenomenal year.
Yeah, especially this one. I mean, this year particularly. I mean, obviously, we kind of follow stuff a little bit more. But it seems like he had a phenomenal year. I think, what did he say? He had three down this
yep.
year?
Yep.
And, yeah, so that's good on him. So,
and almost four. He should have had four. He had four.
Yeah.
But sounds like he had,
didn't work out.
It's yeah. still hung up in Nebraska.
yeah. Yeah.
But, bad deal. Yeah, and sounds like he's going to take over our social media for us, too.
That'd that's be awesome. Great.
If we pump those numbers up a little more. We still got them rookie numbers.
I like, you know what sucks is like you're like, you know what, I'm gonna try something today. I'm gonna do a reel and I'm gonna work hard at it. You know, I freaking suck at it, so it takes a lot of effort. And you're like, I'm gonna do this reel, and it gets like 47 views.
Yep.
And you're like, well, that was fun.
That's why I don't do this.
I mean, you tried real hard on my coyote picture. Andy has a new friend.
I thought that was you shortened to the point, bro. Like, see, and it was your new friend, didn't you say?
I mean, I guess we're friends.
So I thought it was good.
More of acquaintances.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. No longer breathing friends.
I don't speak to him much anymore.
you called him once.
I did. I called him once.
Yeah.
Never again.
Never again. All right. Well, fellas, it was a good one tonight. Hope y'all enjoy it.
Yep.
We're hopping off.
Make sure to check out Blake's stuff and give him some likes and follows if you enjoyed. I think it looks like, by the looks of it, I think most people already like and follow him. So,
hey, that's a good point. We haven't said this in a while. Like and follow us.
Yeah.
Check out our Instagram, which is at Missouri Woods and Water, all spelled out. Facebook, probably the same thing. And check us out on Go Wild.
Go Wild, yep.
Check us out, not check us out, but search Missouri Woods and Water on that. And if you wouldn't mind, leave us a review.
Yeah.
On whatever podcasting platform you use. I would prefer it to be a 5-star, but you do whatever you want to do. And
and most importantly, word of mouth. If you like us, share it with your friends. Tell them to give us a listen. And
if you don't like us, share it with your friends and tell them to listen to us anyway.
Like, I don't like them, but maybe you will.
Check so out these idiots.
Mike is a real idiot, but Nate's real smart.
Yeah, okay. Okay.
Love you.
Well, that's it for us today, guys.
That's Mike's perfect signature
fight
side.
Breaks out here.
Yeah. All right. Hey, thanks for listening, everybody.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.